It is time for the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, April the 15th. And let's get right to it. We are going to talk with two guests from different political perspectives about the big political news of the week. And today we are happy to have with us Ed Garvey, senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil & Associates and publisher of FightingBob.com. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joy.
And joining us by telephone is Steve Prestigard, conservative commentator, author of the Prestablog, and former editor and publisher of Marketplace Magazine. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, and maybe may I be the first person to wish Ed happy birthday on Monday.
How did you know that, Steve?
Well, that's funny, because I have this, with the new blog, I have this kind of birthday thing going on, and Ed was mentioned as having his birthday on Monday. The only problem is he's mentioned as having been the head of the Major League Baseball Players Association, which becomes a surprise to Marvin Miller, I'm sure.
Well, I, in fact, got a phone call after I was on Joy's program about a year ago. This guy said, "You screwed up baseball, now keep your hands off politics." I said, "It was football." I screwed up football. Oh, okay.
Well, happy birthday early, Ed.
Thank you.
And as your birthday present, you get to pick the first topic. Actually, you did come in here with a little bit of news. Maybe we should break some news.
Well, it's interesting. We got this report that the governor wants to introduce a financial martial law bill that would go through the legislature that would permit the governor to take over a local community if the community fails the stress test. And it's being put together, the plans, by Foley & Lardner, the biggest law firm in the state, working with the Greater Milwaukee Committee, as well as the, I'm sure, the Bradley Foundation and the people in Milwaukee. And they have a website, www.makeityourmilwaukee.com, which I think people should take a look at, because this is really a startling development, and it's part of the power takeover that we see with Kasich in Ohio and Christie in New Jersey and Snyder in Michigan, as well as Walker here. It would really put all local government in jeopardy. If the governor decides that it's in economic stress, he could take over and take the powers away from the school board or the city council, could cancel any of the labor contracts and impose new ones. So it's really total power being focused in the governor's mansion. I think when people find out about this and that they want to fast-track this in May to get it over with before the recall elections, there's going to be even more people up at the square than there were before.
Yeah, you're a little bit of a disadvantage here, Steve, in that we're just kind of dropping this on you. But any thoughts on this?
Well, this is something I haven't heard before the last minute or so. What I would say is that regardless of whether you like this particular proposal or not, and obviously the legislature's, you know, in the democratic process in the state's going to have to approve this. The fact is that this state is basically drowning in red ink. And it's not just state government, but there are local governments that have issues with unfunded employee pension mandates and high number or high amounts of debt and so on. And if this is such a horrible thing, as Ed seems to think, I want to hear what the better answer is. And I'm not sure at this point when we're going to hear what the better answer is for, you know, the $2.9 billion in the actual state deficit of $2.9 billion as of the end of the last fiscal year, and the large amount of debt that is the case in with state and local governments throughout this state. This state actually has one of the highest amount of per capita government debt, state and local government debt in the entire country.
We must be in pretty good shape when you think about it, because they were able to give away tax breaks to corporations in the first 100 days of Walker's administration. And so, you know, if they have that kind of money to give away, certainly they can't be broke. And I think that the mantra of the right wing, the Koch brothers-sponsored Tea Party and so on, is that we're broke, therefore we have to go to extraordinary means. But I was surprised, to hear that you know about this bill, and nobody else seems to know about it. The media certainly doesn't know about it. So I think when this gets some public airing, you'll find out that there are different answers than the one that's being proposed by Foley and Lardner.
Well, since we're talking about Governor Walker and state budgets, Governor Walker was on Capitol Hill yesterday testifying before Congress. It was a committee that was looking into, you know, state budget problems, and I know the title of it was State Budget Cuts: Choice or Necessity. And Ed, you think that it's mainly a choice?
Well, sure, it's a choice. And what was interesting yesterday was catching Dennis Kucinich, catching Walker under oath, asking him how much money was saved by his budget repair bill, particularly the stripping of the unions of their right to, or the local, or city and county officials to negotiate collectively. And after a couple of questions, he finally admitted that it saved no money. And that was kind of pleasant
to
hear.
Let me play at least an excerpt of that questioning. Dennis Kucinich questioning Scott Walker, Governor Walker.
And whether or not they went up to $1,000.
How much money does it save, Governor? Just
that particular part doesn't save any.
Okay, that's right.
In the same way that if you read the federal budget,
no effect whatsoever.
I'll answer your question.
I'm reclaiming my time. It obviously had no effect whatsoever on the state budget.
And that's your point, too, Ed, that the collective bargaining stuff has no effect on the state budget?
Well, absolutely right. I mean, and you know, we have yet to hear any explanation of how taking away the rights of people to form unions and the right to bargain collectively is going to help the community, because we just can't hear anything from the governor except we're broke, we have to take extraordinary measures. Now they're even talking about this financial Marshall Plan. It's quite devastating, it seems to me, to the progressive history of this state.
Steve.
Well, I'm glad that there's an opportunity to explain this. And the answer is this. State government spend, or government spending, I should say, has increased tremendously since the late 1970s, which is when the mediation arbitration law came into effect. This is not going to save money in an immediate budget, but because of public employee unions, they have had compensation packages that exceed what the people who are paying for those, that is to say taxpayers, are getting. Is it going to save present money? No. Is it going to save future money? Yes, it is. And the fiscal situation of this state did not occur overnight, and it didn't occur just under Democratic governors or Democratic-controlled legislatures. And what Walker has done, what the legislature has passed, assuming it ends up being enacted, is to prevent or to create a mechanism that's going to hit the brakes on employee compensation. Most businesses, the vast majority of businesses, the highest expense they have is employee compensation. And if it wasn't for shared revenue in this state, the highest expense that state government would have is paying their own employees. And so this is not something about today. This is something about the future. And that's the explanation. And it's kind of surprising that nobody's been able to figure it out. It's not about today. It's about the next budget, well, and the budget after that, and the budget after that.
Well, see, let me ask you this. Dennis Kucinich was asking Walker why what would be saved by saying that the unions must vote every year as to whether or not they want to remain in the union. And of course, he said it wouldn't save any money whatsoever. I've never heard of anything like this, and I've been practicing law since for a long time, and labor law in particular. I've never heard anyone say, well, our bargainers are so bad that we have to take away the right to bargain. And that's essentially what is happening. Walker says he's no match for Marty Beal, so he needs help by making sure that Marty Beal doesn't have the people behind him. This is clear union busting, because they don't want to have employees have any rights at the bargaining table, and I don't think the people of this state are going to put up with that for very long.
I think the November 2 election results demonstrate that there are more people who are disturbed about the state of government spending in this state than Ed seems to think.
Steve, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But I guess I did.
I mean, we will obviously get an answer in in, you know, coming up in November 2012.
I think there was a congressman from, I'm not sure.
I can't remember where he's from either, but he asked specifically if the governor campaigned on the collective bargaining issue.
And he finally had to say no, he didn't. So he hasn't told us, and it's sort of like this Marshall Plan, financial Marshall Plan. He hasn't told us anything about that. You've heard about it. Foley and Lardner's obviously heard about it. The Bradley Foundation's heard about it. I'm sure that the governor, and we understand that Alberta Darling is one of the point people in pushing this through, they've all heard about it. We're going to hear about it at the last minute, and they're going to say, well, this is going to save money for the state of Wisconsin because we can come in and help communities that have been mismanaged by people like Scott Walker when he was county executive in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and you're saying, Steve, though, you think the majority of the voters in the state of Wisconsin are behind what Governor Walker is doing.
Well, I mean, you have to look at who was in office on November 1st, 2010, and who won on November 2nd, 2010. And I think if you look at Wisconsin, you would be very hard pressed to find another state that had the kind of swing that Wisconsin had. We had a Democratic governor. We had Democratic statewide officials, the treasurer, both houses of the legislature were controlled by Democrats. And in one day, all of that changed. Republican governor, Republican attorney general got reelected. We had a Republican state treasurer, and both houses of the legislature changed. And what's the better explanation for that kind of sweep that we had in Wisconsin? The thing that Walker has done that I think he's being underestimated for in terms of doing a politically smart thing is getting all the controversial stuff out of the way now. If in November 2012 the economy is much better and we're not reading about the hideous deficits at the state level, I think people are going to, I don't know about forget, but they're going to vote for Republicans in 2012. And in November 2014, they'll vote for Walker's reelection. If that doesn't happen, if things are not better, then Walker's not going to get reelected. That's just how politics works.
Let me, we'll talk a little bit more later in the program. It was the 100th day in office for Governor Scott Walker this week. He gave himself a grade, and a lot of people are talking about his accomplishments so far. We'll have you weigh in. Both of you can give Scott Walker a grade later in the program. But
oh, good.
Let's take Dana in Neillsville first. Hi, Dana.
Hello. I was just calling. I watched a little bit of the episode on Capitol Hill yesterday. And I thought that it was Dennis Kucinich just took it as an opportunity to take a jab at Scott Walker. I didn't feel that it was necessary to talk about the social issues when it was a fiscal meeting that he had him under oath for. I'll take my answer off the air.
There's no need for him to be quizzing him on the collective bargaining stuff because that wasn't a fiscal issue, Ed Garvey.
Well, he said it was. That's how they tried to justify this coming before the people of Wisconsin. I don't know what's proper and what's improper before these congressional committees because most of it is a waste of time. But the fact that at least one member of Congress was able to put the question to Scott Walker that none of us have been able to do by saying, did this save money for the state of Wisconsin when you stripped the employees of their right to collectively bargain? He had to say no. So at least we got that answer from him, and we're thankful to Dennis Kucinich.
Let me get another caller, and Steve can respond to Jeff in Waterloo. Hi, Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Actually, this thing that Ed has brought up this morning is real interesting. In that it falls in line with what we're seeing happening in Michigan and Ohio and all that. It's obvious that there's a whole lot of work that's gone in ahead of time. And kind of coordinating this really right-wing agenda that has very little to do, actually, with budgets or fiscal discipline or anything like that. It's just a real assault on what I see, the middle class. And I guess I'd like, your commentators to really talk about this. Bill Cronin, the professor who was, under attack by the Republicans, wanting his email and all that, he had really looked at ALEC. I'm not sure what the acronym is for, but it's this organization that has really looked at coordinating all these things and trying to figure out how they're going to pursue this this agenda through the state houses, and that's what's going on.
Yeah. So let's, Steve, this was just Governor Walker is part of this coordinated right-wing assault on the middle class.
Well, according to what I saw on the Journal Sentinel's website, apparently I am too, which means I'm eagerly awaiting my direct deposit for, you know, from the Koch brothers or whatever. You know, I fail to understand why it is that the 15% of taxpayers who work for some level of government in this state should get better total compensation packages than the 85% who are not employed by government but are paying for all of this through their taxes. Unfortunately, I didn't hear everything that the caller said, but I believe that there are as many left-wing think tanks in this country who would like to do coordinated things at the state level than there are right-wing think tanks. I think that's rather
Steve, I have to ask an example
of political conspiracy theory.
If you're looking for a birthday present for me, you might get a hold of any left-wing think tanks and tell them to give me a call. I see plenty of right-wingers out there.
Let me take our break. We're past break time talking with Steve Prestegard, who is a commentator, author of the Presta blog, former editor and publisher of Marketplace magazine, and Ed Garvey, senior partner at the law firm of Garvey McNeil and Associates, publisher of FightingBob.com, our two guests this week for our Week in Review. And we will continue talking about issues in the news this week and continue taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I think when we come back, we'll talk about federal budget issues that were front and center in Washington, D.C. this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon after 4 o'clock, it's Your Views on the News. Ben Marins and his guest will also talk about the big news stories of the week, and you can call in and tell us what you think is the most significant news story of the week during Your Views on the News after 8. Talking with Ed Garvey and Steve Prestegard during this edition of our Week in Review. On Wednesday, President Obama unveiled his deficit reduction plan. He's saying that we can save $4 trillion over the next 12 years through spending cuts and through tax increases as well, or at least not allowing the Bush-era tax breaks to continue. Let's take a listen to President Obama, who was concerned about the Republicans' plan when it comes to Medicare.
I will not allow Medicare to become a voucher program that leaves seniors at the mercy of the insurance industry with a shrinking benefit to pay for rising costs. I will not tell families with children who have disabilities that they have to fend for themselves. We will reform these programs. But we will not abandon the fundamental commitment this country has kept for generations.
And Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan responded to President Obama's plans with this.
This is very sad and very unfortunate. Rather than building bridges, he's poisoning wells. By failing seriously to confront the most predictable economic crisis in our nation's history, the president's policies are committing us and our children to a diminished future.
All right, Ed Garvey, you first. President Obama's plan or Paul Ryan's plan?
Well, Obama, that's the guy I voted for. I mean, when I heard his speech, Betty and I were thrilled because it's the Obama that we want as our president. When Paul Ryan says he should be building bridges, there wouldn't be enough money in the federal government to build any bridges. So, you know, for Ryan to be coming up with what I think is totally irresponsible tax plan, or not tax plan, but spending cuts without any increase in taxes is just irresponsible. So I think that this is going to be an interesting election. I think Obama's going to win it easily, and people are going to get back to common sense. You can't continue to give a free ride to the top 1 or 2% so that we have to live off the backs of the middle class and the working poor.
All right. So, but Paul Ryan says Medicare's it's not sustainable. It's going to ruin.
Well, that's right. If you don't have any new income, if you don't increase revenues at all, and if you don't do anything at all, you say, oh, here the sky is falling. The Ryan plan is, I think, an example of what happens when somebody gets in a situation where they say that I'm going to come up with a plan that's going to resolve all issues by myself. I don't need any help from anybody who knows what they're talking about. And I think it's been very disappointing, and I think that people are not very impressed with the effort.
All right, so Ed's going with President Obama's plan, Steve.
President Obama's plan is a joke for two reasons. Number one, there's not a single budget cut there that would have any significance whatsoever. Number two, to expect that the, whether Ed likes it or not, this happens to be the case, the top 1% of earners who already pay 38% of federal income taxes, the top five pay 58%, to believe that you can just raise taxes on those people and they will very cheerfully go pay these additional taxes is ridiculous.
What are they going to do?
Those happen to be the people who have many more options than the middle class in terms of how to shelter their income, including moving it out of this country. The Economist last night said that, The Economist, which is one of the world's premier financial publications, they say that there is no way in the world that Obama's tax plan would work to balance the budget unless you raise taxes on the middle class. Whatever you say about Paul Ryan's plan, he at least is not going to make things worse by raising taxes on people who we are then supposed to, that are supposed to promote, get the economy moving in a better direction than it already is.
Well,
I don't necessarily think Paul Ryan's plan is the answer either. If you were serious about getting rid of the deficit, you'd have to basically take every plan that there is and enact all of them in order to get rid of the deficit.
All right, so not
Obama's plan is going to do is a joke.
Not 100% a thumbs up for Paul Ryan's plan from Steve. But Steve, what about on the Medicare proposal? Do you think that the American people want the Medicare program to be changed to such an extent?
Well, if the choice is either that or having Medicare run out of money, I'm guessing that the first option would be what most people pick. There's been a lot of attention paid to Social Security, which is in the process of going broke, but what? Medicare is in the process of going broke faster. And to expect that a program that was created in the 1960s in the case of Medicare cannot be made better, cannot be made with a more stable and yet less onerous kind of financial mechanism is to think that American progress ended with Lyndon Johnson. I don't think most people believe that's the case.
When I hear Steve's choices, I'm reminded of the capital punishment rule in Utah. You can choose whether you want to be shot or gassed. If you refuse to raise revenues, if you refuse to do anything about, say, a General Electric that had a $24 billion profit but pays no taxes and is getting a tax refund, as a matter of fact, when you do nothing about repealing NAFTA to keep jobs in this country, you do nothing about those things, then you say, oh, my goodness, things are not going well because people are unemployed, they're not raising the revenues, and we can't raise taxes on the rich because if they get angry, look out, they're going to move everything abroad. And you say, well, they already have. I think it's time that the president has taken them on. I think it's going to be an interesting battle. And what I think the American people want is a fair tax system. They don't mind paying a little bit more, but they want to make sure that it's fair. And I think what Ryan misses and most of the Republicans miss is that if you're going to go to war in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and have bases all over the world, you can't afford to take care of your needs right at home. And I think it's time that we did that.
Let me bring some callers in. Scott in Green Bay, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. It always amazes me that Democrats think fair tax means people paying more. I mean, if the top 10% are already paying over 50%, I don't know how in the
world. And they're not.
What?
And they're not.
What, the top 10% are paying over 50% of all income taxes. That's the truth. And I don't know how Ed says that they're getting a free ride, which you just said.
That's not the tax
I have a great idea. Let's have the rich pay the Clinton income tax rate. So let's go back to the Clinton era, which I know Democrats love. They love to cite how great the Clinton era was. Let's go back to the Clinton budget of his last year, which was $1.8 trillion. I'll concede the tax issue if you guys concede the spending issue. Obama's spending $3.6 trillion. If you raise it back to the Clinton era, that will generate $80 billion a year. That is an accounting error when it comes to the $1.5 trillion deficit we have.
I'll do you one better than that. Let's go back to Eisenhower, where a good Republican said that those who were making money at the top of the scale should pay up to 90% in taxes. If you want to go to the Clinton taxes, at least you would agree repeal the Bush tax cuts for the top 1% and 2% so that money could come into the system. If you want to take care of Social Security, take the cap off the contributions for FICA taxes so that if Bill Gates makes $1 billion, he pays his percentage on the entire billion, not just up to $120,000. Then you take care of all the problems of Social Security. We are not going to say to the people of this country who have seniors and children with disabilities and so on, you're on your own. Those days are over.
Let me take a call from Dave in Menominee, and Steve will respond to Dave's question or point. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I did want to bring up the widening wealth gap that we have. It's never been as wide, as I understand, it's never been this wide before in the country's history. The super rich, the ultra rich, the top 1%, they're making an average of $27 million. To say that they need a tax break,
it's a joke.
It just does not make sense. And we have to remember, tax breaks do not create jobs. President Bush gave huge tax breaks, and those breaks eliminated, those taxes the companies would have to pay to head overseas. So tax breaks do not create jobs. Tax breaks create deficits.
Steve.
Well, okay, that explains why Bill Clinton passed the investment tax credits in the 1990s and why we had the huge economic boom in the 1980s. So your tax break assertion, I think, is incomplete. Moreover, Ed made this comment earlier about the horror of, businesses making profits, which I guess I'm not surprised coming out of, somebody out of Madison that they would think their profits are bad. If you look at any, 90% of the businesses in this country are small businesses. Take a look at a small business's payroll versus the amount of taxes that are paid, and you'll find that payroll is significantly higher. Moreover, and this is the point The Economist made basically yesterday, people get it, you get attention with how much money Warren Buffett has and Bill Gates and whoever else. But the fact is, there's not that many people in this country that make that kind of money. If you were really concerned about the middle class and about the poor and, the people that Democrats claim to be so concerned about, you would be less concerned about the gap between the rich and everybody else, and you would be more interested in specifically how the middle class is doing. Whether Warren Buffett has $4, $5, $6 billion or whatever doesn't make a difference. It is what the middle class is experiencing right now. The middle class being the same people who are paying gas prices of up to $4 a gallon and all of that. I don't care about the super rich. They can take care of themselves. But if you're really serious about the middle class, you got to be concerned about how they are doing relative to how they were doing a year or two ago, and not some, created numbers about what the gap is.
Very briefly, Ed, you had something on that?
Well, just Kevin Phillips, who is one of the brightest and best writers and who wrote the Southern Strategy for at the time of the Nixon administration, he said in 1984 the rich declared class war against the middle class and the poor, and they have won. I don't think they've won completely, but they're sure trying to take care of it quite well. And I think all the policies that we now see coming from Scott Walker here in the state of Wisconsin and those that we saw from George Bush favor the rich over the rest of us.
We had Tammy Baldwin on a little bit earlier this morning, and She told us that the House of Representatives today is going to be voting on this this budget plan that Paul Ryan put forward already today. That surprised me. I didn't think it was going to come up so soon. But she says she's voting no. What do you think is going to happen, Ed, in the House of Representatives today?
Oh, I think it's going to be voted down, and I think they wanted to have a quick vote to get it off the front pages because it's such a ludicrous plan. So mean-spirited, and it is going to be the death knell of the Republican Party down the road as people realize what they're calling for, that they really don't want to take care of any of the problems that we have for the majority of the people in this country. Will they take care of the super rich who make the contributions to the campaigns that they then turn around and use to do things like declare a financial disaster in the local community so they can take over the state or the local governments?
Your prediction, Steve?
It may well pass, or it may not. It's not going to make a difference because Obama's not going to sign into law. The thing is, and even before that, I'm not sure the Senate's going to pass it. The fact is that there is yet to be a really, truly serious deficit reduction plan in Congress. Clearly, the deal that Obama and Congress supposedly came up with last week isn't it. We've discovered that the actual budget cuts are about one-tenth of what were being claimed. And, you know, the fact is that the federal government is not broke because they still have the ability to tax. But whatever the closest thing is in terms of government finance, we're that. We're already at $1 trillion-plus deficit in this country, and nobody is really taking that very seriously based on the plans Democrat and Republican have been introduced.
Let me ask about this this deal that was voted on yesterday, the deal to keep the government funded that passed in Congress. But we had people like Ron Johnson voting against it and Tammy Baldwin voting against it. This is the legislation that cuts about $40 billion from the budget for the current year. Ed Garvey, was that a good deal?
Well, I was surprised. I didn't know that Ron Johnson had taken his seat in the Senate, so that was hot news this morning. The package was not a good package. I agree certainly with Tammy Baldwin. It should have been voted down. And I think the president gave away too much in those negotiations, but he just didn't, at that time, he said he didn't have the tools to fight him. Now that it's on a broader scale, I think we'll see a different result.
Yeah. Did you think that deal was a good one or not, Steve?
Again, it's not a serious, you know, it's not serious because it's not large enough. I'm not sure why Tammy Baldwin voted against it, but, you know, this... Everybody's kind of like nibbling on the margin, basically, and trying to come up with, you know, phantom budget cuts like, well, we have a little money left over from TARP. We won't spend that. Or, you know, we have some money left from the stimulus package and we won't use that. That's not serious budget cutting. And this wasn't serious budget cutting. And again, nothing that's been introduced is really very serious budget cutting. There is no fiscal issue that we face in this country that raising taxes is going to fix. And, you know, it's just the usual political games being played that are not going to result in anything getting better in terms of the country's fiscal situation.
You know, Saul Alinsky said you have to tip your hat to Lucifer because at least he has his own kingdom. And I have to tip my hat to the Republicans for defining the issue as a deficit problem. I mean, they have really been good at it. They have, of course, most of the corporate media just follows lockstep behind whatever the Bradley Foundation and Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute and the Koch brothers tell them to do. But the fact is that rather than focusing on the revenue problem and having fair taxation, they've got everybody saying, well, this one doesn't deal with this deficit. This one doesn't deal with that deficit. And so everybody starts thinking deficit instead of revenue. We are not broke. If we are broke, the entire world is in trouble. What we need is the courage to tax those who have been benefiting from the system for the past two decades.
Let me hold it there because we do have a break to take and many other issues to address. We'll do a lot of state issues coming up in just a moment. Our two guests this week for the Week in Review, Ed Garvey and Steve Prestigard. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's time for our Week in Review quiz. This week, Governor Scott Walker marked his 100th day in office. He gave himself a grade, We've talked about it on the air here. It's been in the news. What is the grade that he gave himself for his accomplishments, for his performance, for the first 100 days in office? And I don't want our guests to give it away. If you think you know, 1-800-642-1234. Call us, and we will select a winner from all of the correct answers. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email talk@wpr.org. The winner will receive a book that we featured on the program this week. We are talking about the news of the week with Ed Garvey and Steve Prestigard, and this might be your opportunity to assess or to give Governor Walker a grade. Ed Garvey, what grade do you give Governor Walker for his first 100 days in office?
Well, if he comes to Bob Fest North in Chippewa on the 21st of May, we'll give him a better grade than we would now, but now I have to give him an F.
Did you just get a plug-in for
Bob Fest North? Regular Bob Fest will be in Madison in September.
And when is Bob Fest North?
May 21st.
Okay, all right. And Steve, what's your grade?
B, no better than that, because, you know, we still have way too high taxes in this state, and they haven't done enough about that. But, you know, the dirty little secret about the whole collective bargaining thing is, assuming that this becomes law, I wouldn't be surprised to see a future Democratic governor not give collective bargaining back to the employees because, you know, at some point, managers need to be able to manage, and that includes in state government as well as in private business. But I don't think he deserves more than a B.
Well, speaking of collective bargaining, Judge Sumi dismissed one of the collective bargaining lawsuits before her. It is the one that was brought before her by the Dane County Executive, Kathleen Falk. How big a deal is this, Ed Garvey, that Judge Sumi dismissed that case?
Oh, I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact because the other two suits are still proceeding. The real issue, though, of course, is whether the voters of Wisconsin had any understanding of what the Walker people were trying to pull off. And I think it's been exposed now. And I think when the recall elections take place, it's the opportunity then for people who are opposed to what's going on to have their voices heard. If they regain control of the state Senate as a kind of a check and balance over the governor and the assembly, that'll have a great impact. The dismissal of Kathleen Falk from that suit is really over a technicality in the sense that no one from state government or local officials can sue on constitutional grounds. So I think it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And comment on that lawsuit dismissal, Steve?
Yeah, Ed's probably right. It's the legal definite or the legal issue here, I think, is standing, if I understand right. It correctly. So, yeah, it's not going to make a huge difference. It'll make, you know, more of a difference. I think Ed is somewhat optimistic about the recalls. There are apparently people trying to recall Glenn Grothman, which I think is hilarious because he's not exactly had a real close race in what is one of the most Republican Senate districts in the state. They're just wasting their time with that. The other thing, of course,
when they're slobs.
What's that?
And he called them all slobs.
Well, I think what's more interesting is, you know, Walker has the most strong veto pen in the country. And to think that things are going to necessarily change if there are enough recall successful to turn the Senate into Democratic control, I think is being really optimistic to the point of delusional, because as Tommy Thompson demonstrated back when he had a Democratic-controlled legislature, you can do more with the Wisconsin veto pen than any other governor in the country can. So, to think things are going to be all that different, even if the recall succeed, is, I think, a case of hope over experience.
You know, the State Journal reported today that Sarah Palin is coming to Madison tomorrow for the Tea Party rally, the Tax Day rally.
Oh, good.
And that Sarah Palin was saying, apparently, that one of the reasons she wanted to come was to lend support to Governor Walker and the Republicans that were facing recall. Steve, is her presence going to help?
Well, it'll give the news media in Madison something to cover on, you know, a weekend that usually is kind of dull in the scheme of things. I'm not necessarily a fan of Sarah Palin In fact, I don't think I would vote for her for president. But what I find amusing about Sarah Palin is the extent to which Sarah Palin drives people on the left totally nuts. That, for no other reason, makes me a fan of her because, you know, people start foaming at the mouth whenever the word Sarah Palin get mentioned. And, you know, she drives conservatives, obviously. I don't think that she has hardly any chance at all of getting even the Republican nomination for president, let alone getting elected president. But the mere fact of how angry lefties get over Sarah Palin is just hilarious to me. I think it's just fantastic.
I don't know. I think most of us contain ourselves because we get to see Michelle Bachmann and Donald Trump coming on the scene. It sort of makes Palin seem like a fairly rational person.
Let's do a number of other issues in our remaining moments here, kind of in a lightning round. So just brief comments, if you can, on all of them. So the Waukesha County Clerk says she will not resign. She apologized for the mistake that was revealed a couple of days after the election. The votes from the city of Brookfield, which turned the election, or at least gave the lead, a substantial lead, to Supreme Court Justice David Prosser. Ed, what's going on in Waukesha County?
Well, this is her, I think it's her fifth time to have screwed things up. And if she isn't guilty of malfeasance, I don't know who is. I would hope that the voters would recall her, or that the Government Accountability Board would make sure that they have plenty of people there to cover any future elections. Because she, I mean, the idea that she could have a different computer than the one provided by the state, hold the results for 19 hours before telling people she'd made this, quote, mistake, unquote. Nobody can quite get a handle on it, and that's why I'm glad that Tammy Baldwin's asked the federal government to come in and take a look, because I think this requires an investigation from the Justice Department to try to restore some of the credibility of our Supreme Court, because nobody believes that this election was run properly.
And the Government Accountability Board did announce that it's going to look back at least 5 years because of some of these other discrepancies that have come up on the website and numbers not jiving. Steve Prestigard, your thoughts on that story?
Well, for one thing, I think if you look, you would find that Democrats are not the only one who are not real pleased about how the Waukesha County Clerk's Office seems to conduct elections. There's a bigger issue here that has nothing to do with the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. The big issue is, why are we electing county clerks and district attorneys and sheriffs and registers of deeds and county treasurers in the first place? You know, there should be no difference between how, for instance, a Republican sheriff enforces state law and county ordinances or how a Democratic sheriff does. I would argue those should not be elective offices at all, but at the minimum, there should not be an R or a D on any of those countywide offices. You want government reform? Do that.
Steve, I suspect you've never run for office, because if you had, you would find out that the people of this state love the sheriff. I mean, you could have the most important election in the world, but the thing that will divide people is between their two sheriff candidates. So.
Let's go on to another. The state legislature passed a bill that overrides Milwaukee's sick leave law. The state legislature told Milwaukee it couldn't mandate businesses provide sick days to their employees. Steve Prestigard, why do that?
Because it passed because it should have passed, because employee benefits are an issue between employers and employees and not anybody else. That should be up to, employers decide what they are able to afford, what they need to do in terms of salaries and benefits to attract employees. And if they find they're not attracting the quality of employees that they want, then they need to change. That is not the function of government. Should not be the function of government to tell businesses what kind of employee benefits they need to be providing to their employees.
Let me see if I get this right. You can't have unions for the public employees, because that could cost some money. And you can't have local government, as Milwaukee did with 69% voting in a referendum, to say 5 days of sick leave for a person who is employed, because you have to keep the government out of that calculus. How do people improve their circumstances in life? Just by seances, or what is it? If you can't have unions and you can't have the local government supporting you, who will support you?
You work harder. You improve yourself by education. You go into business. Those are the ways that it works in this country. It is not by government telling, you know, a 5-employee business that the owner has to give his employees sick leave. If the employees don't like the employee benefits that are being offered, they have every right to leave.
Well, and for heaven's
sake.
If
a business finds out that they're losing employees because of their benefits, that's up to the business.
Any employer,
it's not up to government to mandate it.
Any employer who doesn't give sick leave to his or her employees is pretty suspect to begin with. So if that's the kind of business people were attracting to Wisconsin with these tax packages, nuts to it. Let them go someplace else.
We are out of time. We need to reveal the winner of this week's quiz, John in Schofield. Congratulations. He correctly guessed the grade that Governor Walker gave himself for his first 100 days in office. Let's take a listen to Governor Walker.
B+. I think you look at all the things we said we're going to do up to this point, we've really done.
B+. So thanks to John in Schofield and everybody who tried to guess. We will be sending you the book of your choice very soon. Ed Garvey, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
And Steve Prestigard, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend. Say hello to Sarah for me.
You're not coming down for the rally?
No, he's getting ready for Bobfest North on the 21st of May.
Thanks very much to both of you for being here. Well, I hope everybody has a good weekend. I am going to be off next week. John Munson will be filling in for me. I thank him in advance for that. I thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.